On August the 20th of 1778, George Washington wrote Thomas Nelson and said, "The hand of Providence has been so conspicuous in all of this that he must be worse than an infidel who lacks faith, and more than wicked that is not gratitude enough to acknowledge his obligation." Our first president spoke of God's providence. You know, we speak of providence, but what is providence? Well, if you were to go back to the 1828 American Dictionary of the English Language by Noah Webster, it defines providence as, in theology, the care and superintendence which God exercises over his creatures. And then goes on to say, by divine providence is often understood God himself. That's how George Washington would have understood it. When Washington spoke of providence, that's how the early colonists understood providence, God himself. We might say that providence is God working behind the scenes. Now, when God works right out in the open, when he parts the Red Sea, when he turns water into wine, when Christ walks on water, when God heals someone by touch, that's a miracle. And often we use the word miracle very loosely. Everything's a miracle. It's not. But God does work at times where it's not an outward miracle which God superimposes over the laws which he has established, sets them aside for a while. Providence is God working within his laws, where he just brings everything together so that something happens. So let's think a little bit about providence this morning. Let us notice some examples of divine providence in the Bible. We can see that even back in the book of Genesis. Recently, we did a study of the life of Abraham. And you probably remember in Genesis chapter 24, God's getting a bride for Isaac. We actually see God's providence in the selection of Rebekah as Isaac's wife. Now, I'm going to assume that you know the story. If you don't, Genesis 24, read it later. But for sake of time, we're just going to think a little bit about what happened. Did that servant which came there to this faraway city, did he just happen to arrive at the time of the drawing of water? Remember, he prayed that God would provide a wife and a sign with the drawing of water. Did he just happen to arrive at that time? Did Rebekah just happen to arrive at just the right moment? Did the servant just happen to ask Rebekah first of all the women that were there? Did Rebekah just happen to answer as the servant had prayed that she would? Did Rebekah just happen to be of the family of Abraham, of which family the servant had come seeking a bride for Isaac? No. God's hand, God's providence was at work behind the scenes. Or let's think about Exodus chapter 2. God's providence is seen in the saving of baby Moses. Again, I'm sure you know the story. How all the babies of the Hebrew children at that time, all the baby boys, were being slaughtered. And yet Moses' mother had saved him back and protected him. You know, you can only hide a baby so long. And so she prayed, I'm sure, and she had Miriam, Moses' sister, put him in a little basket and put that basket down on the Nile River among the bulrushes. Did Pharaoh's daughter just happen to be at the Nile that very moment, that day? Why not later in the day? Why not another person? But only Pharaoh's daughter could save Moses from Pharaoh's wrath. Did she just happen to be moved within by the baby's cry? Did she just happen then to agree to let a Jewess, which happened to be Moses' mother, raise the baby for her? No. God's providence is seen at work behind the scenes. Or let's think about God's providence in the New Testament. when Jesus met the Samaritan woman at the well, John chapter 4. Again, a very familiar story, how Jesus was traveling from down south and went through Samaria and stopped there at that well of Sychar. His men go into the city to get food, and this woman comes out and Jesus asks her for a drink of water, and from which he's able to lead her into a knowledge of himself as Savior, and then also later lead many in that city to a knowledge of Jesus as Savior. Did Jesus just happen to travel through Samaria rather than go transjordan across the river? Did Jesus just happen to send the 12 into town so that he could speak to the woman in private? Did this spiritually needy woman just happen to arrive at just the right time? No. God's providence is clearly working behind the scenes to bring all this about. A matter of fact, John 4, verses 3 through 4, Jesus says, Jesus left Judea and departed into Galilee, and he must needs go through Samaria. God's working it all together. One of the prime examples is seen in the Old Testament, the book of Esther. In the book of Esther, a man rises up who is going to want to destroy all the Jews, Haman. And God works it all out so that Haman's plots are defeated. If you don't know the story, read the little book of Esther. It's an exciting story. Did it just happen that Esther was chosen to be the queen of Persia at just that right period when the Jews were going to be in a danger of extermination? Did Mordecai or her cousin just happen to overhear a plot and save the king's life? Did it just happen that Mordecai wasn't rewarded at the time? But when it became time that they were going to kill the Jews, that the king couldn't sleep that night? Did it just happen he sent for the court records, maybe to be bored to death and go to sleep, and that the scribe just happened to read the account of how Mordecai had saved his life, and just happened that the king decided to reward him at that time? Did it just happen that Esther was able to win the king's ear and save her people? No. God is providentially moving silently and invisibly behind the events to bring about the nation's salvation. Mordecai says to Esther, in Esther chapter 4, verse 14, who knoweth whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this? That's providence as seen in a few instances in the Bible. We can see more. But let's look at the examples of God's providence in the life of George Washington, our first president. In their book, 150 Great Americans, William Bennett and John Cribb write, at times it was Washington's character alone that seemed to hold the fledgling United States together. He became a symbol of what Americans were struggling for, risking his life and fortune to lead his countrymen to liberty. During the Battle of the Revolution at Monmouth in New Jersey, the American troops were in confused flight and on the verge of destruction when General Washington appeared on the field. Soldiers stopped in their tracks and stared at the tall, blue-coated figure spurred his horse up and down the line, halting the retreat. The young Marquis de Lafayette remembered the sight for the rest of his life, how Washington, and I quote, rode all along the lines amid the shouts of the soldiers, cheering them by his voice and example, and restoring to our standard the fortunes of the fight. I thought then as now that never had I beheld so superb a man, unquote. The authors go on to say, the general turned his army around. The fighting raged until sundown, and that night the British took the chance to slip away. Washington's very presence had stopped a rout and turned the tide of battle. And it was not the only time. Again and again, Americans turned to Washington. He was, as biographer James Flexner called him, the indispensable man of the American founding. Without Washington, there might never have been a United States. Was it just happenings that Washington lived at that time and was selected to lead the army? No, God in his providence provided a Washington. And God's providence is seen in numerous times in Washington's own very life. First of all, Did you know that George Washington wanted to join the British Navy when he was a teenager? His desire was that he even got his eldest brother to begin to make arrangements for him to make to join the Navy. That could have changed the entire history of the United States. And yet his mother forbade it and would not allow it. Did that just happen? He then became a frontier surveyor. In 1748, when he was 16 years old, Washington joined a surveying team for a trek in Virginia's rugged western frontier. We don't think of Virginia as being the frontier, but back then it was. As they felled trees and cut through thickets to make their surveys, Washington and his companions met an Indian war party. Now, the war party were returning from a raid. They outnumbered the surveyors, and yet they let these men live unaccountably. On the same expedition, Washington survived a freak accident. He bedded down that night, and his bedding was straw. And for some reason, the straw caught fire. But before his clothing could catch fire, one of the other surveyors woke up and saw it and put out the blaze. These close calls were among the first in an extraordinary number of narrow escapes that Washington experienced throughout his life. He could have died very young, but he didn't, and he attributed those to divine intervention. When he surveyed from his 1748 surveying adventure, filled with zeal for the rigors and the adventures of the frontier, he was motivated to plunge into his survey books, and a little more than a year later was appointed a county surveyor while still in his teens. The job put him in the wilds of the western Virginia woods, where he learned the ways of the field. He acquired skills that would serve him very well in his future as a military commander. Thirdly, he survived smallpox while still a teenager. In November of 1751, 19-year-old George Washington was struck with smallpox. He was in the Caribbean with his eldest brother, Lawrence. Now, smallpox was a killer disease at that time, taking the life of 20% of the sufferers and leaving legions of even those who survived blind. Yet Washington survived with nothing more than a few pockmarks and an immunity to the disease. Thus, in the future, during the Revolutionary War, when smallpox struck his troops and thousands of soldiers died, Washington was not affected but could continue to lead his soldiers. Did that just happen? And then he gained military experience against the French before and after the French and Indian War. In 1753, at age 21, he was a commissioned major and district adjunct of the Virginia Colonial Troops, appointed by the acting governor. This placed him in a position of leadership, required him to learn military drill and discipline and tactics, and the first time in his life was placed in charge of other men. A year later, the governor promoted him to lieutenant colonel in command of 150 Virginia volunteers and sent him south to help the British. During this time, he saw combat. He learned valuable lessons about command, and even in defeat, learned lessons that would help him later on in life. Did that just happen, that he was being prepared to one day lead our troops? And here's one of the amazing things. He survived battle after battle without even being wounded. He was never wounded in battle. A year after what we just talked about, the government of London decided to make a forceful stand against the French on the American frontier as the French and Indian War unfolded. General Edward Braddock and 1,400 British regulars were dispatched to march against the French stronghold of Fort Duquesne. Washington, meanwhile, had resigned his command, but now petitioned the commanding general for a command in the campaign. Braddock, aware of his familiarity with the area where they'd be fighting, and the operation would go on, made the young officer an aide on his command staff. The British Army, one man said, lumbered. I guess there's probably no better word, through the forest. They didn't know how to fight in America. You have to understand, the British were used to European fighting. In European fighting, it was very clear. You got a great big open area. One army would just be on one side. One army would be on the other side. They'd march out and face each other and begin to shoot. That's how they fought. That's not how they fought in the frontier lands. So they're going. On July the 9th of 1755, they were ambushed, the British were, by the French and Indians, who fought frontier style. They fought from behind trees. They fought from behind rocks. The British would just march out in the open and begin to shoot, and they were sitting ducks. Braddock lined his men up, European style. They were slaughtered. More than 900 British troops were killed or wounded. Braddock himself was mortally wounded and died. Two-thirds of the expedition's officers were killed or wounded. Washington was reported the only officer in Braddock's presence who escaped the battle unharmed. He rode back and forth to get his troops to continue to fight. Two horses were shot out from under him. When the battle was over and they had retreated, it is said that Washington had four bullet holes through his coat, that he took off his hat and brushed basically parts of balls of the bullets out of his hair. He was convinced then and for the rest of his life he'd been spared by God's sovereign grace. Because of this, David Barton, the American historian, has referred to him as the bulletproof George Washington. Years passed, and later he met with an Indian chief who wanted to meet with him. The chief says, "You may not know, but I was there that day of the battle. And because you were the only officer still riding around on a horse, I told my men to shoot at you. Take down the man on the horse. My men never miss." And they shot, and they shot, and they could not kill you. "I finally told my men, stop shooting at him. He's protected by the Great Spirit for something of the future." Now we begin to see a little bit. He understood God's overseeing providence in his life. In all of this, we also see God's providence in the life of George Washington, protecting him, preparing him for his role in the Revolutionary War. We can then see examples of God's providence in the American Revolutionary War. First of all, I think we can see God's providence in the Battle of Bunker Hill. Everybody here has heard of the Battle of Bunker Hill? First major battle of the Revolutionary War. On June the 17th of 1775, a group of hastily assembled and poorly trained New England militia lost a battle. We refer to as the Battle of Bunker Hill. They lost it, but from the British perspective, however, the victory cost them more than they were prepared to pay. The British lost an aura of invincibility that day. Before that time, the Americans basically looked at the British troops and said, "They can't be beaten. They can't be fought." They lost that, even though they won the battle. This perspective had always been an important part of their power in the colonies. What should have been an easy rout turned into a heated and hard-fought battle. An amazing outcome had taken place on this hill as a result of an amazing series of events. Now, by modern standards of casualties, the casualties were light in this battle. There were 115 Americans killed, 305 wounded. The British lost 216 killed, 828 wounded. However, the British casualties represented 40% of their attacking force. And at that time, that was considered horrendous. An undisputed victory, on the other hand, would have been a clear signal. If the British could have just beat the Americans right then, it would have told the Americans, "Hey, insurrection is futile. There is no reason to fight us. We'll beat you no matter what." The odds clearly favored that outcome. But as the events unfolded, God's hand and providence changed the odds. Briefly, let me give you an overview of the battle. During the night of that day before, the Americans had... The scene is Boston. I don't know if you can picture Boston. Boston is basically, it's not an island. but it's connected with just a little sliver of land to the main coast. And then there's another little bit of water, and there's another sliver of land which is connected to the main coast. Bunker Hill is on that little sliver of land, that other one. And there's another hill, but they call the whole area. They just refer to it as Bunker Hill. The other hill's Breed's Hill. During the night, the Americans had come over to that other sliver of land around Bunker Hill. They had begun to dig in and had built up mounds of dirt to have like a little bit of a fortress area ahead of them so they could begin the fight. And they had also begun to went over and they put into different sides, and there was a picket fence over there, would have been to their left, and they got men over there, and then they said, well, we need more men over here by the seashore in case they can't come around us. So the next morning, they worked all through the night to build this up. The next morning, one of the ships in harbor, one of the military ships, looked over, and there are all these colonialists over there. So they open fire onto it. And the military are woken up in Boston, what's going on? And so the general, the governor in charge of the military, said, we need to take care of this. And so what they did was, it was advised, well, we just need to go around and come in from behind and block them off, and we can starve them out. But the commander said, no, we're going to make an example. We will ferry men across and attack them right there, and we'll just rout them easily. And then we'll have our ships, and we'll bring other men over, and we're going to attack them from the front. We're going to come from the side, and we'll move our men around along the coast, and we'll attack them, get behind them, and we'll catch them in between in a pincer movement, and we'll just decimate them. Well, things didn't quite work out that way. When they got across to attack, the men were well protected. When they brought their cannons across or whatever to do it, we'd say mortars, they brought the wrong size cannonball. When they asked for naval support for a ship to go up that by the side of them and shoot over up the river, the admiral said, no, I haven't checked that area out. I don't know how deep it is. When they decided, okay, we'll go ahead and attack anyway, and we'll come around and get in behind, one man had noticed, one of the officers had noticed, that the land right there by the sea, the shore, they could have come around and did that. He put men over there, had it all prepared. So that when the British attacked, the first assault massacred British troops. They came back and tried again. Another massacre. Now, by this time, days going on, the men have worked all night. The Americans had worked all night long. They were exhausted. They had not brought enough water with them or food. They were thirsty and hungry and running low on ammunition. The third assault won. And they had to retreat. But they were able to retreat safely because they'd had men positioned over there to the left that could help them to retreat. And it wasn't a total rout. Now, let me ask some questions. Why did the British attack the Americans on the peninsula? Why didn't they just come around and block them off? Did it just happen? Or was it providence? Did one American colonel just happen to notice that there was a drop-off at the end of that fence area and an empty beach below where the British could have come around? Did he just happen to decide to commit a force by the way of 200 men to protect it and stop a British assault that would have put them behind the American lines? Did the British just happen not to have checked previously that section of the river to find out it wasn't deep enough? Did the British just happen to bring the wrong size of cannonballs so they couldn't use them early on? No. God's providence was at work to encourage the Americans to fight for their independence. You might say, well, then why didn't God allow them to win that day? Well, Washington had been sent now by the Continental Congress to take charge of the army. If they would have won, they might have thought, well, we don't need him. We can fight individually as just colonies instead of being united as one. God saw, took care of it all. God's providence was seen in the Battle of Long Island. In August of 27th of 1776, the British attacked and defeated Washington Army on Long Island by New York. The disorganized Americans could only await the British's final assault. The British had them. Now, the British subordinate commanders requested and pleaded with British General Howe for permission to deliver the final blow and destroy the armies. That would have ended the Revolutionary War. But Howe decided, no, I want naval support. Now, a powerful storm at this time came in with high winds and heavy rains throughout August the 28th and the 29th. It stopped the naval support that he needed. This gave Washington and his army time to retreat in small boats. Now, it would have seemed impossible that this would be done because of the high winds. And yet, just at the right time, the winds died down. And Washington was able to get his troops in the boats and get them across, most of them across the river or across the channel. Now, just before dawn, the weather changed once more on behalf of the Americans. There were still some Americans left there on the front, you know, basically making the British think that the entire army was still in camp. They still had fires. They were still marching. They were still making noise to make the British think they were there. How are they going to get out? Well, a thick fog came in unexpectedly. A citizen of New York said that a fog at that season had not been seen in 20 years. Under the cover of the fog, the remainder of Washington's army and Washington himself, who stayed till last, embarked in small boats and cleared of the Brooklyn shoreline. Now, interestingly enough, during the night, a loyalist to the British had dispatched her Negro servant to the British to let them know what was going on. She had seen what was going on. This servant was stopped by a Haitian patrol. Now, the Haitians were German hired mercenaries that the British had hired to help the British army. They didn't all know English. And this Haitian patrol could not understand what the servant was saying. And so they kept him under guard until the next morning before he was able to talk to a British officer. By then, it was too late. Did the British general just happen to make the wrong decision? Did the weather just happen to change to stop the British naval support? Did the weather happen to change again to allow the Americans to escape? Did a fog just happen to arise at the right time to complete the withdrawal? Did the messenger who could have informed the British just happen to be stopped by a part of the army that couldn't understand English, so he couldn't tell his story in time? No. God's providence is clearly seen as the rescue of Washington and his army. We could go on with incident after incident after incident where God's providence is there. But let me just tell you one more. I think we've all heard about Washington's crossing the Delaware. Let me give you some background. It's known as the Battle of Trenton. By late 1776, the British had chased the American rebels for a month all the way across New Jersey. It seemed there was no more fight left in the Americans or in their leader, George Washington. The war seemed to be coming to an end. As Washington pulled his tattered army back across the Delaware River on December the 7th, the new nation had quickly come to its darkest hour. In desperation, he began to conceive one more plan to recross the Delaware and attack the Haitian, the German garrison, composed of 1,400 veteran troops occupying Trenton. Washington had to depend on total surprise. If he was going to cross over and attack and have any means of success, it had to be a secret. They had to take them by surprise. But the British began to hear rumors of rebel activity several days before Christmas. On December the 25th, they were ready. But about 7 o'clock, firing broke out on the north side of the town. The colonel in charge thought it was the awaited attack. In reality, we're not sure what happened. Maybe a group of about 30 rebel troops had attacked the outpost and were driven off. Thinking that the expected assault was over, that's what he'd been hearing rumors of, the colonel ordered a stand down of his troops, sent them back to their barracks, decided that he himself, since it was Christmas Day, would join a Christmas party and would play cards and drink throughout the night. Now, a farmer who was on the side of the British knocked on the door of the house where the colonel was and asked to speak with him. He knew what was going on. But the servant there wouldn't let him in with the news that would have stopped Washington. He told him the colonel was too busy to see anyone. So the farmer wrote out a note explaining everything, gave it to the servant. The servant did take it into the colonel, gave it to the colonel who was playing cards. The colonel didn't bother reading it. He stuck it in his pocket and continued to play cards. Washington crossed the Delaware River late Christmas Day, surprising the Haitians the next morning. He won the battle. When the nearby British army attempted to advance upon Trenton to help out, they were mired in the mud in an unseasonably warm day. Then when Washington realized he needed to retreat and draw his troops back, the temperatures dropped again, the land froze, allowing him to get his troops across the land. News spread across the country. Where America was about to give up, now confidence in Washington and the Continental Army took an upward turn. The news reached England later. The reaction was shock, disillusionment. It was suddenly obvious there would be no quick end to the war. All because it worked that night. But did a mysterious phantom attack from unknown sources just happen to misguide the British into thinking the awaited assault was over? Did Haitian commander there just happen to not get the note or not receive that man and then take the note and just happen to put it in his pocket and not know the truth of the situation? Did the weather just happen to protect Washington from assault from the British troops and reprisal and then just happen to let him retreat? No, God again in providence worked in the behalf of America in the fight for freedom. We have seen God working providentially in the Bible. We have seen God working providentially in the life of George Washington in the days before the Revolutionary War. We have seen God's providence during the Revolutionary War. Without divine providence, there never would have been a United States of America. And that's what Washington was referring to. But let's not stop there. God continues to work today behind the scene, in events and in lives today. As you thoughtfully consider your life, can you see maybe times where God's hand of providence were behind many events? Where you just happened to choose the right college to go to? Where you just happened to choose the right profession? Or you just happened to meet the right girl or the right guy? When God just happened to lead you to the right place, the right church, or the right advice you needed. You see, God has not stopped working today. You may not see great miracles all the time, but we need to look behind the scene and see His hand moving silently in providence. Maybe you're in a position right now, you don't know what to do. You're not sure what's going to happen, or you're not sure what the future holds. Who does? But you can trust God's hand in providence. Let God lead you. Let God be God. Be open to His guidance in your life. Let's close in prayer. Our Father in heaven, we thank You. We thank You, dear Lord, for Your providence. We thank You, dear Lord, that You are not silent, that You whisper to us through Your Spirit. You speak to us in Your Word. You guide us, dear Lord, like a master general. And dear Lord, it all works out when we're willing to listen and we're willing to be guided. May You do so in our lives and may You get the glory. In Jesus' name, amen. Would you stand with me and let's close with one more song. We gather together.
Fellowship. Next Sunday, we start our study of James in our Bible study. Have a fantastic week. God bless you.